Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Starting tomorrow in the debut show, join Jeremy with the Headliner's Ball. Friday's a split between Crawling Into the Darks with Pam and Break On Through. Saturday, join Faye, Xana, and Babbler as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And Mondays are split between The Hearts of L&P with Victoria and New Chapters in the Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. Now, these shows are designed so they can shoot color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into your words. How you doing, Pam? And how you doing, Luke?
Yes, it's good to see Luke hanging on the board. That's always appreciated. I got to tell you, Rex, I am a bowl full of awesome sauce with a side order of curly fries. Life is good. And how are you doing?
Just fine.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. I am ready to take a walk on the wild side. So it looks like a great lineup of poetry tonight. A great choice for a topic for prompts. Quotes by Hunter S. Thompson. Very cool.
Excellent. Yeah, that's got to be something people would enjoy. We had a couple of late runners.
Oh, definitely. Yep. And you know, with the him being the inventor of the Gonzo style of journalism, you know, it really lends itself well to giving kind of a freedom to play with your poetry. So, very cool.
Well, I guess we should kick it off then.
All righty then. Up next, or up first, not up next, we have Hi by Kendall. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Hi by Kendall. She fills empty wet candy, frail lace edges panties, weighing in on anchors, mostly lawyers, businessmen, and bankers. Cracks creaking crevices, so she makes up stories with pretty faces. A deer in the headlight eyes, her colors compromised. Rolling dough with a hustle and flow, another welcome high. She never quits or says goodbye. End poem. And Ken took the prompt. Number one, which didn't list. I'll have to go look at that one because I don't remember him offhand. All right. Where is it? The person who doesn't scatter the morning dew will not comb gray hair. Okay.
First of all, great read there, Rex. This is a wonderful brevity that holds a lot of weight to it. You know, I really like how he gives us a story of a woman who's either a prostitute or uses sex to fill the emptiness in her life. I really do get the idea of weighing in on anchors, mostly lawyers, businessmen, and bankers, that it's a prostitute. I like how he brings to that within those lines the thought that it's the rich that are keeping her down at this level. I also really like the deer in the headlight. I like how he played with the word deer by spelling it D-E-A-R instead of D-E-E-R. I thought that was a great way to play with the word and to be the idea of how she could have been somebody's sweetheart, but instead she cannot give up. She cannot quit this life of prostitution. Constitution. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. I'm going to go with something akin to a little later on in life, because it drops in the note of how she is. She fills empty, wet, candy, frail, lace-edges panties. Cracks, creaking crevices, so she makes up stories with pretty faces. So the idea of she's enlarged herself from those days when she was young and pretty, walking the streets. But now she makes up for it with stories and still the smile that runs with it. And down near the bottom, I like the thought with rolling dough with a hustle and flow, another welcome high, rolling dough with a hustle and flow. Dough spelt with the thought of a deer in the headlights, but the thought she shit with rolling dough hits on the note of money. So there's a double play with the voice and the word dough right there. And sort of, she never quits or says goodbye. She's got to keep walking the streets and buying her goodies. What else she can do at the moment? First, she's made her bed, and now she's actually got to lay in it.
I like that. And, yeah, you're right. I definitely could see that with the cracks, creaking crevices, and the idea of that she's still doing the same thing she did when she was younger. Because, as you said, there's nothing else at this point she can do, and she keeps just bringing herself back to those days when she was younger, when she was beautiful. And I totally miss rolling dough as a play with words. That was really cool there, just very clever. So great observation, Rex.
All righty. So what should we dine on next?
All right, that is a good question.
We've got a second on the board. Hey, Robbie, how you doing?
Oh, hey, Robbie, good to see you hanging on the board. Let me see. Let me grab the next one here. And, yeah, good to see Robbie. All right, and up next we have List of Possibilities by Orence. And it goes like this. When a space elephant sneezes, it blows a hole into space-time. When God is bored, he, she, it pops the universe's bubble wrap. There are space worms burrowing and eating stars. Andromeda sucks at embroidering and left holes. Swan songs are so tragic notes pooled together in acid seas that eat at the fabric of space. When a star is no longer a star, it can't take it and explodes. Space leviathans breathe spinning clouds of nothing out of their blowholes. When moons eat too much of the sun, they burp way too loudly. When the universe is sad, it cuts itself. Black holes are actually colorful, and we are colorblind. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Arendt took the prompt. I learned a long time ago that reality was much weirder than anyone's imagination. And painting this as it is kind of hits on that very same note. But down in the back end, it says, when the universe is sad, it cuts itself. A nice note there. Black holes are actually colorful and we are colorblind. And the note of when a star is no longer a star, it can't take it and explodes. Little pops and thoughts to individuality within the universe itself and how it spreads, how it revolves, and what might be the underlying cause and effect that is drawn out. Because, hey, we don't know enough right now to actually offer up the thought of why black holes exist, other than it's a star going falling in on itself. But then again, why does it eat all the gravity? Does not emit light out of its blowholes on either side, except once in a while you get a burst of gamma radiation that spreads across the universe. And along with other touches here, I guess I'm going to leave them alone because you're going to have something to comment on.
Absolutely. Well, great comment there, Rex. You know, I've enjoyed this one so much. It's clever. It's fun. I love the sense of surrealism and the dreamlike quality to wondering about the universe. You know, like each one of these is like, I like how she puts them, the lines are, you know, there's not big stanzas. It's like 1 to 2 lines per stanza. And it's almost as if each line was a look at a star that makes up the whole. I have to say, I really smiled and enjoyed when God is bored, he, she, it pops the universe's bubble wrap. You know, I just think about how we all so much enjoy popping bubble wrap and playing with bubble wrap. And you think of the stars that and the galaxy, the things that disappear from the universes, and how the idea of it being God being bored. I really also like that she ends this with a question mark and the idea that black holes are actually colorful and we are colorblind. You know, and I think that makes for a really great metaphor in the idea that there is so much out there that we don't open our minds to seeing. And another part that I really liked that I thought made a great metaphor was when a star is no longer a star, it can't take it and explodes. That really made me think, it made me think about scientifically about the idea of stars that explode, but it also made me think about the idea of someone who, when they're famous, when they're popular, when they're at the height of their career or whatever it is, or even if it's like, you know, say the height of their life was when they were in high school and they were, you know, the popular kid. And then when they don't have that height of fame, they don't have that popularity, they're no longer the star. They're no longer the center of everybody's universe. They don't know what to do with themselves, and life kind of comes crashing down around them. So I really thought this was just creative and very well done.
Yep, with some notes to humor. When moons eat too much of the sun, they burp way too loudly. And space survives and breathes spinning clouds of nothing out of their blowhole.
That was great, and you can just picture it. You can. I you know, you've got this visual in your head, at least I do, of a moon belching way too loud. So, very cool.
All right, where do we go now?
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. I do notice that she put in her IAN, she says, a rewrite of an earlier write for the contest black hole. What caused this black hole? And she says, I don't want a scientific answer, but a child's view. And I can definitely see that, I have to say. I can definitely see this being the perspective of a child. So very cool. All right. And up next, and I see we got Leela on the board too, along with Luke and Robbie. So nice full room in Late Night Poets.
Hello,
and
Leela.
Up next we have Dolly Meeting Thompson by Garanwy. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Dolly Meeting Thompson by Garanwy. Chasing down the moon dust flowing through my dreams, molten magma color of sapans on melting clocks, twirling their mustaches beneath Edwardian top hats granted by belief. Burnished with the gloss of silken nails, trepanned as a trio on Golgotha's skull, and a Pharisee of judgment in a deal with God, shriven on the roads to the stations of the cross. I'm looking for my lost Dally in the gallery of Kelvin Hall, a hanging perspective crucified from above that is the devil's deal, wreathed in fiery magma burning in my dream, fleeing from my purgatory. Like pilgrim meeting Apollyon, opening sleeping eyes to a giant of despair, made of moon dust turned to morning mist in a horrid progress of a trip to purgatory, made in my doubting castle. O death, where is thy sting? Keeping my appointment on my marble slab as a dreaming cadaver stolen from this world, I'm a passionate little boy who is father to the man, mother to the child seeking truth in the virgin birth. Dreams about the moon, while caught in the magnificence of my prostituted words, bought and sold, leaving ink on the page and dreams telling lies, the pilgrimage of writing is signed with my blood. Accompanied by Apollyon's laughter, goes on forever in the mockery of fools. This atheist pilgrim stands on the magma's brim, shouting back the mockery of belief to religious fools. None of it is true. All the gods and books are empty fairy tales, made to steal our liberties. Dreams my sanctuary from what the fools tell me is God's truth. They protect me from the thought police of religion, who pretend they know God's so-called rules, made in Bible-quoting bigotry, written with the power of the gun, so you can go to paradise, paid up and well-tied, with bullets made in flesh and blood. Bang, bang, bang. And, oh. And, Garon, we took prompt one, too, which was that one about the... nothing is wilder. Yeah. Nothing in my imagination would be wilder than what is born out of reality. All right. What you got?
Prompt one. Fiction is based on reality unless you're a fairy tale artist. I think that one was taken more often. What's that?
I quoted that one wrong. What the hell was I reading?
Yeah, the one you just quoted was, I know it's on here. I saw it, but it's not prompt one. But it's real close to it. You quoted prompt three. I learned a long time ago that reality was much weirder than anyone's imagination. But actually what I had noticed is that with the prompts you offered up, prompts one and three were the most, I believe, the most written to. Now, first of all, I love that he came up with the concept of Dolly meeting Thompson, you know, because to me, and I don't know about them real well, but the little I've read and observed through their quotes and, you know, reading about them, they both seem like men who were both neurotic and confident at the same time. Like, they both seem to have this kind of neuroses, but at the same time, there's almost a cockiness to them. So I just think that was a great call to mix the two of them together. I really like how he took this in the way of reporting the way that Hunter S. Thompson would have, but bringing in the imagery of so many of Dolly's painting, like the Golgotha skull, you know, what else here? He brings up a lot of Dolly's religious paintings, like the Christ. Let's see here. I really like keeping my appointment on my marble slab as a dreaming cadaver stolen from this world. I am a passionate little boy who is father to the man, mother to the child seeking truth in the virgin birth. You know, I really like those lines, especially mother to the child seeking truth in the virgin birth, because it really speaks to me on the whole idea of how we seek answers, you know, and not everybody, but there are those who seek answers. They have questions. And then there are those who don't want questions asked. You know, they want you to just take their word for it. I also really like who has dreams about the moon while caught in the magnificence of my prostituted words, bought and sold, bleeding ink to the page and dreams telling lies, the pilgrimage of writing is signed with my blood. That really, to me, shows how we escalate those oftentimes who write or do art into an almost godlike status. but it's a godlike status that comes by the metaphorical prostitution, the selling of oneself. Like maybe what somebody originally intended to be when they said they were going to become an author or become an artist got put on the wayside. So really just powerful lines and very well done.
Wow, thank you very much. And it was well said. I did like this, but just for the thought of Thompson's egregious thought and verbiage playing off of Dolly itself. Nice touch. Chasing down the moon, dust flowing through my dreams, molten magma colors of hands on melting clocks, twirling their mustaches beneath Edwardian top hats in an authority granted by belief. There is a great note to that, the thought of the melting clocks, one of Dolly's most prolific ideas of time itself and how it just slips away, melts, gets lost. Then the next one, I did like that thought, trepanned as a trio on Golgotha's skull. Trepanned, it's a word you don't see very often, which infers the idea of actually drilling into the brain, drilling into the skull, so you can open up to relieve pressure or do a little bit of brain surgery. In a Pharisee of judgment and to deal with God, shriven on the roads to the stations of the cross. That was a great thought there, shriven. Those who take confession. And then that next one, to open up each stanza with a great a couple of lines. I'm looking for my lost Dolly in the gallery of Kelvin Hall, a hanging perspective crucified from above. That is the devil's deal. Kelvin Hall, it's a, it was a gallery in Scotland, I think, opened up in the early 20th century. It's now a sports museum of sorts, and they do concerts and other things there. But at one point, it was a museum. So I like that touch right there. And then the thought with the pilgrim, Apollyon. Apollyon, the abyss. Nice touch with that. And that's what I'm a passionate little boy who is father to the man, mother to the child seeking truth in the virgin birth. A way to bring all that together, that thought itself. And then that very next stanza, with dreams about the moon, while caught in the magnificence of my prostitute words, bought and sold. Sort of both Dolly and Thompson roll right into that thought. Leaving ink on the page and dreams telling lies. The pilgrimage of writing is signed with my blood. It's kind of a nice note of mocking himself as well as giving rise to Dolly himself. And then the thought, the back end of this, the atheist angle and the chiding of the church itself. The well type with bullets made of flesh and blood, bang, bang, bang. It's on that note of all the wars and thoughts fought just in the name of Catholicism itself. Nicely done, Garanwy. This was really good.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree with you. It is phenomenal. And I'm glad you brought up that word trepanned and the meaning of it, because that really adds to the depth of the poem to know what like a word like that word means. The bang, bang, bang was just a powerful way to finalize, you know, this poem. So very cool. And see what we have next. And up next we have M-I-N-I-M by Brooker. And I am going to try to read this somewhat of a tongue twister poem with all its I-M's and I-N's. So we'll see how this goes. All right. And it goes like this. Little souls sit and stroke the sounds of the stethoscope. Outlaw motorcades fade in the ether smoke, risky jokes laced with the trace of being broke. I'm a dog dying, trying to escape my rope. Auto fiction fixates on mental hope. gods in the kitchen tweaking an isotope. Nothing ever comes of those arrhythmic rages. People like to win what they lose in stages. How can you count clear when you're counting wages? Before you know your worth, you'll be drowned in ages. Freedom is afraid to like its own ideas, passive in its praise, submissive to its peers. Freedom is a pawn. Freedom is a plague. Freedom is a felon always in the Hague. Freedom is learning to ignore the flies. Freedom is ignorance. Freedom was wise. But freedom's never ever hidden its disguise. Freedom's repetition, repeating stolen lies. Am I awake? Am I? Am I? And I know I am. I'm an N. I am. I'm sure I am. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. I like that bottom end, the rogue on the sort of quote. I think, therefore I am, playing with that angle, offering up. Am I? Yes, I think I am. Oh, and then for sure I am. So I like the play in this. Where is it? Outlaw motorcade spade in ether smoke. Risky jokes laced with a trace of being broke. I'm a dog dying, trying to escape my rope. Audio fiction fixates on mental hope. God's in the kitchen tweaking. There's a nice line. God's in the kitchen tweaking an isotope. Kind of a little bite to the sort of tweaking on methamphetamine there, and offering up the bite that, hey, we're all left to our own devices, and God doesn't care what we do because he's already done it. He's been there, and now he's resting on his laurels. And then, fourth, before you know your worth, you'll be drowned in ages. And then this bite to freedom all through here, and the idea of freedom's repetition, repeating stolen lies. Freedom is ignorance. Freedom was wise. Freedom is learning to ignore the flies. And the thought, freedom is a felon always in the hay. Well, that kind of pokes the idea of, with the freedom of going back to that, my thought on God's tweaking an isotope. And by the way, he's had enough and he's taken a break. It's that free will is kind of escaping and run amok with the thought of that felon always in the Hague. Hague being the place where you go to out of those people like Hitler, Idi Amin, Pol Pot, and a slew of others we've had the pleasure and displeasure of knowing over the last couple of hundred years. All right, what about you?
You know, I really like how you mentioned, you said the phrase, free will running amok. That was just really cool right there. And you're right, this does capture that, especially that third stanza, capture that whole feeling of free will running amok. You know, this was just quite a challenge to read, but it was fun. I like that you brought up the I think, therefore I am philosophy, because, you know, that makes sense. Now, I will admit that I had Popeye the Sailor going through my head, I am what I am. But besides Popeye, I also felt, you know, then there's also kind of a religious spiritual incantation. Like it made me think of when Christ said to the Pharisee, you know, I am before you were, or before, before something, I can't remember exactly, but he said the simple phrase, I am, and that sent them into a tizzy. And the reason it sent them into a tizzy, most people know this, but I'll chat anyways, is because they knew that the minute he said that phrase, I am, he was saying, I am the one and only God. And so to me, I feel like the question in this, you know, but I do like going, I like what you had to say, and I think you're probably right, but I like how the question in this is, am I a God? Am I you know, are we all gods? And if we are all gods, then am I one? And with this godlike freedom, because I've been given so much freedom and so much power, you know, what am I capable of doing that I would be afraid that I would do? I really liked how there was a really hard-hitting kind of rap-like feel to the first three stanzas. I could definitely a wonderful flow. The freedom is learning to ignore the flies. Really made me think of the book, The Lord of the Flies, and how, you know, the idea that, you know, if we ignore the flies because we ignore the evil that's going on. We ignore the dead bodies. You know, I think it's just a wonderfully thought-provoking rite in what it offers up. So beautifully written and very well done.
Well, that's good. What is it like?
Thank you.
All right. Where do we go now?
All right. Up next, we have Can I Nap in Heaven by Julie Buck. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
And, well, let's see. She took the quote right up front. I have never believed much in luck, and my sense of humor has tended to walk on the dark side. Can I Nap in Heaven by Julie Buck. Doubt takes over and leads me to a window that I never thought I'd want to look through. Yes, I sit next to every day. Aspirations? Why? When all we're going to do is die. I don't count on luck or fill my belief bag with unstoppable fate. I don't enjoy my wounded view, no mercy with death and worse. We have no voice, and damn how I despise having no choice. We'll meet again in heaven and have glorified bodies and live in eternal bliss. Will we? Who believes all this? When the stage lowers my curtain, I'll probably sigh and smell blueberry muffins and see flashes of old sins and people I love. I'll reach out my hand, feeling for things that have no name. Like a snake, I'll slither around my options, and if there is nothing, how would I even know? Am I wrong to not want forever? Guilty of numbly wanting to decline, for eternity sounds like a long, long time. Frankly, I am weary now and long to sleep. Can I nap in heaven? End poem. All right, Pam.
Oh, I love that question. Great read there, Rex. You know, and I think that is a really good question because honestly, I'm not sure I want to go to heaven if I can't nap there. That just, you know, I really like how there's always with Julie this, and this was a perfect quote for her to choose because she does got that dark, twisted sense of humor. She's also got a raw reality to her writing, you know, like she just lays it out bare. And I really like, I don't count on luck or fill my belief bag with unstoppable fate. I don't enjoy my wilted view, no mercy with death, and worse, we have no voice, and damn, how I despise having no choice. I can say fluffy stuff such as, we'll meet again in heaven and have glorified bodies and live in eternal bliss. Will we? Who believes all this? You know, I love that she asks questions. I think that's part of being human is, you know, asking questions. And I love how she calls it fluffy stuff. And, you know, I really appreciate that because one of the most difficult things to go through is when either somebody close to you dies or, you know somebody who's died, somebody who's lost somebody they care about, and you're trying to find the right things to say, and it all just comes out like sounding like fluffy stuff. I really like when the stage lowers my curtains, wonderful, you know, reference to the Shakespeare's All the World's a Stage and the end of life being the lowering of the curtains. And, you know, I really like the idea. I have to say that for somebody who questions whether or not there is an afterlife, Julie has a phenomenal idea of what heaven should be like. The smell of blueberry muffins, taking a nap. You know, I mean, it all sounds really good to me. So this definitely had a great, it was philosophy with a sardonic bite of humor. And I really enjoyed this.
Well said. Well, I'm gonna answer that last question and burst everybody's bubble. Because when you finally get up there, old Big Lips, Mick, will come over and start singing to you. Hey, hey, he, get off of my cloud. Hey, hey, he, get off of my cloud. So hell no, there's not going to be no napping in heaven. Especially when there's clouds to be left on, considering you offered up the fluffy stuff, which is the clouds anyway. So, yeah, and I do like the sardonic bite in this because it does, she took that prompt literally and went dark with the humor angle. And did it in a wry, dry way, so it makes you think about the thoughts. Because aspirations, why? When all we're gonna do is die, I don't count or unlock or fill my belief bag with unstoppable fate. The blueberry muffins might be that angle, a wishful thing of blueberry muffins. Must be my turn to die. Then that's when the flash of old sin and people that she loves comes throughout to show their thought. But she drops in too, like a snake. I'll slither around my option, and if there's nothing, how would I even know? A double bite from the asp in the corner. Nicely done, Julie.
Absolutely, I have to agree. And, yeah, you know, I've also heard that that people who have, just before having a stroke or while having a stroke, will hallucinate smell. Maybe the blueberry muffins was somebody having a stroke.
Blueberry muffin, wishful thinking.
What's that?
Wishful thinking.
Or wishful. Okay. I guess
the last thing she probably smells is the loosening of her butt cheeks, where the all that excess gas just floats across her body in the moment.
Oh so, my gosh! Yeah, right.
Yeah, want to smell blueberry muffins? This is what you get instead: the stench of your own death.
Right. Yes. Probably.
Robbie dropped in. The smell is usually burnt toast.
Oh, okay.
Another
thought
of which we're thinking. Yeah, burnt toast. Ooh. Yeah, that's a little bit more than burnt.
Okay, so people who are potentially having a stroke usually smell burnt toast and not blueberry muffins. Okay, well, now we know. So, all right. And up next we have Crossing the Waterline by Gerald E. Green. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Welcome to Gerald Green Poetry. Crossing the Waterline. Written and read by Gerald Green. Before you serve aboard a ship, choose your captain carefully. Then you might survive each trip, returning home with certainty. You will find what all have found, the truth about the sea, a dreadful place where many drown, a stark reality. Men in muscle manage rigging, moving steerage through the waves, seldom sitting, always gripping, sailing over silent graves. The sea is more than water's edge, more than most people know, a place where young men come to fledge, where sailors bud and grow. civil powers cannot access, cannot cross the wet shoreline. Captains rule with strength and excess in their world of wind and brine. They make the rules and have their ways, demand obedience to keep afloat on stormy days and minimize expense. Each captain rations food and rum, providing for each man, and runs the ship with bell and drum across the ocean's span. And if you disobey his law, a whip will find your back, with welts and stripes that leave it raw, and pain from every crack. A well-run ship tends to survive, to weather storms and gales, allowing it to move and thrive with men and canvas sails. So choose your captain with great care. Select with wisdom's eye to find one who is just and fair, or you may sink and die.
Great read, Gerald.
Visit YouTube for more Gerald Green poetry.
Ooh, wasn't expecting that. Great read, Gerald. Many thanks for the sound file. Appreciate it. And based on your voice, I'm gathering you took prompt 4. It was the lore of the sea, they said. Civilization ends at the waterline. Beyond that, we all enter food chain, and not always right at the top. All right, Pam, what you get?
Well, first of all, I like that he took that prompt because I don't think many people did. So it's always good to see someone grab something different. You know, wonderful extended metaphor. You know, I obviously, like, for me, the really pretty clear message is, though a lot of times his poetry is quite layered, is the idea of, you know, be careful who you vote for. Be careful of who you put into a leadership position. Make sure it's somebody that you morally want to follow. You know, this has a really nice rhyme and flow to it. I really like how he takes us, it fits for modern times because of the whole message of, you know, the civil powers and, you know, the way, you know, the demanding of obedience that far too often happens. But what I like is that he also takes us back to a time when, you know, sailing and working on ships was a way of life. And that it makes me think about how whether you're serving on a ship together or you're serving in the military together or whatever, you have to depend on each other. You have to trust each other, you know, and you have to be, especially be able to trust your leader that they're going to make the right choice, not just for themselves, but for the ship as a whole. And I really like each captain rations food and rum, providing for each man, and runs the ship with bell and drum across the ocean spans. And if you disobey his law, a whip will find your back with welts and stripes that leave it raw and pain from every crack. Great rhyme and flow. The idea of that, you know, that a good leader has to be both loving and harsh, that just, as it says, you know, just and fair. You know, just really just a thoughtful right and on choice of leadership, and very well done.
Well, thank you very much, Pam. And yeah, I like the fact that he took this literally when it comes to the sort of seagoing vessels back in for a couple hundred years, because he mentions each captain rations food and rum, providing for each man, and runs the ship with bell and drum across the ocean span. For well over 300 years, the British Navy gave out a ration of rum every day to the crew. That was part of the fact that they couldn't haul water because it usually went bad anyway. So rum was the thing on the back end of the day that they'd get their ration for. And that ended in, I think, 1965. But he also hit on another couple of thoughts. Civil powers cannot access, cannot cross the wet shoreline. Captains rule with strength and excess in their world of wind and bride. That's true. But civil authority ends at the shoreline. When it comes to the ship itself, the captain is the Lord, the master, the God on board that ship. The angle for it does demand obedience, and that is to keep the expense down, but it's also to keep the ship afloat. And then the thought, if you disobey his law, a whip will find your back with belts and stripes that leave it raw and pain from every crack. Yes, you did get whipped if you were caught asleep on duty, drunk on duty, or anything else that put yourself or the captain with the entirety of the crew in peril. Because you know what? If you're on duty, you fall asleep, and a hurricane comes along, you're all shit out of luck. So the idea of actually paying attention to what you're told to do and what your duties are is sacrosanct. Nobody walks past that line unless they want that whip, or even worse, to get keelhaul. That is a nice, rich, and tumultuous thought of what they did to sailors of certain caliber, so to speak. You got tied to a rope on the yardarm, and you were swung literally under the keel of the ship until you reached the other side. If you survived, you got brought on board. If not, you are fed to Davy Jones's locker.
Wow. But, yeah, I suppose they had to be that rough, tough, you know. And I like that you brought up that line, civil powers cannot access, cannot cross the wet shoreline. You know, that stanza there, I think, was a particularly important one.
Yep. I mean, that's the point. I mean, you look at the pirate ships. A captain could take one of the crew could name themselves captain, but it was usually by design. Crew voted on it. As long as the captain kept to the thought of keeping the ship and the men safe and dividing up the spoil as equal portions, the crew was happy. Otherwise, they took to another captain. All right, where are we going next?
All right. And let's see here. That is a good question. Let's find out together. All right. All right, here we go. Residues of Imagination by Jesna Sajan. And it goes like this. I saw myself in a vision as a snake charmer, capturing snakes, kept them safe, warmer. When I woke up the next day, I remorsed. I was covered in a snake blanket and clothes. I played dead, wondering how to escape. I saw no one around, a beautiful landscape. Snakes were preying, moving over me. I kept still, not to scare them, thinking how to flee. Aphidophobia is the phobia of snakes. The feel of their skin were giving me ache. I felt their absence 3 hours later when my body felt lighter, became a celebrator. I'm alive. They left me free, felt elated. 3 hours left me frustrated yet created. Hope of survival, my instincts triggered them. I ran for my life amidst the woods burn hum. I reached to find a lonely home near a waterfall. I dunked my head into the water, insanity sprawl. I felt lighter, much better from the aftershock. Took rest lying on bare grass, headrest against a rock. That time my mind raced with many weird thoughts. I was struggling with snakes hours ago, connecting dots. Reality was much weirder than anyone's imagination. Contemplation of survival was my present situation. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. Thank you very much. I like the opening of this. I saw myself in a vision of the snake charmer capturing snakes, kept them safe, warmer. When I woke up the next day, I was covered in a snake blanket and clothes. And then to drop in the sort of having ophidiophobia, fear of snakes, but the idea of dreaming that you're a snake charmer and wanting to capture snakes to keep warmer, so to speak, only the notion of fearing snakes kind of hits on that notion of what's in the world itself, the snakes outside in the world, the idea of being surrounded by that which always offers up lies or forked tongues, and the need for safety. The thought of reality was much weirder than anyone's imagination. Contemplation of survival was my present situation. There is a note to understanding the world itself within that thought of the snakes and the snake trauma. Even though she's got the fear of snakes, the idea of the snakes themselves are that which walks in the real world on 2 feet, not that which slithers across the body, although that might be a metaphor for something else that could rear its ugly head. But the idea in here is trying to keep pace with one's own safety in a world that is full of those who are snakes themselves. What about you?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I like how you bring out the thought of how oftentimes we're constantly trying to feel safe in a world full of snakes, of predators. You know, the funny thing is, I was actually talking to my daughter about this poem earlier because I have been having the weirdest. Okay, first of all, a couple nights ago, I had this dream that I got bit in the foot by a snake. And I called into the Friday show, and Jean asked me how I was doing, and you were there. And I just casually said, oh, I'm doing good. I got bit in the foot by a snake, and my foot is swelling up and turning black. So you and Jean were trying to convince me that I needed to go to the hospital. And I kept telling you, no, I was going to be fine, and I was going to stick around for the whole 2 hours. But anyways, so flash to that. I then, you know, I saw, like, I kept seeing snakes, not hallucinating snakes, but, like, we had this poem. There was, I think, somebody on If Your Abs was throwing a contest with a poem titled Cobra. And just everywhere, I kept seeing little tidbits of snakes. And then my daughter had, I made a mistake of telling my daughter about that. So she set one of her toy snakes in my bedroom, which, of course, you know, scared the crap out of me. But I don't count that. But anyways, you know, so that's, you know, I just thought that was, so that was my thing with snakes. And so I've always, and I've had dreams about snakes before, and I find snakes to be fascinating animals because in some cultures and religions, they represent evil, they represent harm. And in others, they actually represent cultures where dreaming about snakes is actually considered good luck. I really like what you had to say about the idea of survival. One of the things I found particularly intriguing about this, right, is that there's the dream of being the snake charmer, and then there was the mention of took rest lying on bare grass, head rest against a rock. And, you know, while people can rest with their heads on rocks, that has been done. It almost makes you feel like that the person who was once the snake charmer has now become the snake. So there's like this complete twist of reality to the idea of no longer recognizing what one's sole purpose is. I did also really like where she says, I'm alive, they left me free, felt elated, 3 hours later left me frustrated yet created. It's almost like the idea of being so high on the jubilation of the life and then asking, okay, where do I go from here? So just absolutely a wonderful write and very well done.
Nice. Well, you got two poisonous snakes up there. Rattlesnake and the Massasauga.
What's that?
The rattlesnake and the Massasauga. Although you do have a bunch of regular snakes that rattle their tails like rattlesnakes, so.
Yes. Well, actually, I don't think in this, as far as I know, not that they couldn't make it up here, but the poisonous snakes in Wisconsin, that there only is a couple kinds, tend to be more southern Wisconsin. But goodness only knows what kind of pets people have up here. So it is completely possible. You know. All right. And up next we have Wizard by Tech Poet Civil. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Wizard by Tech Poet Civil. Believe me, I am not a poet, not a man of words full of pain and regret. I am not in the height of love, nor a narrator of affection. I play with my vision. I see dreams in my dreams. I search wonders in the wonder. I am not a mad. I am not a dome of imagination. I play with myself. I deck myself as king of ace. I dress like a vagabond. I clad my form with a dirty pinafore. Sometimes I am the warrior. Sometimes I am the creator. Sometimes I am the center. I bring about distinction. Sometimes I mix all colors and spoil a canvas. I decorate things in my style. I bring about a stoppage of floating the spine. I create waves in the mid of the ocean of brine. I blow the horn of destruction and count the breathless beats in my creation. Suddenly all vanish into the blue. Everything comes to a halt. Everything becomes normal. Everything looks so simple and clear. The river flows back in its usual go, leaving sparkling, rippling of reddish glow. The sky gets full with birds and lakes with flamingos. I laugh shittily at myself, pulling down the shutter of my fancy flight. Dimming all bulbs and lights, the adept wizard vanishes quickly from the sight. End quote. All right, Ian. What do you think?
Well, now this is... I think it's very intriguing. I think you did a wonderful read of this. I like the first-person narrative. I like how it's the what I am and what I am not things. You know, I am not a poet, not a man of words full of pain and regrets. I am not a mad. I feel like the Hatter should have been after that. I am not a Mad Hatter. I am not a dome of imagination. I like the phrase, I am not a dome of imagination, because to me, it really, like that, and the I am not a mad, I am not a dome of imagination, speaks on the idea of somebody who doesn't feel the need, sorry, to make things up, you know. I create waves in the mid of the ocean of brine. I blow the horn of destruction and count the deathless beats in my creation. I blow the horn of destruction really makes me think of that song about and the story about the walls of Jericho coming down, you know, after the horns were blown, or it kind of gives an end time type feel to it. I really like the imagery, and the sky gets full with birds and the lakes with flamingos. I laugh shiftily at myself, pulling down the shutter of my fancy flight. You can't help but think that there's almost this idea of, you know, this wizard with almost like a godlike power being completely just proud of himself. You know, I just really clever and fun imagery. And, you know, I liked the humor in this, especially in that ending, and very well done.
Sorry. Yep. Well, by the voice, I'm guessing you took fiction is based on reality, unless you're a fairy tale artist. So he does bite into sort of the fairy tale with the wizard action and offers up that sort of, I am not a dome of imagination. Yes, that kind of gets thrown in the face of the fact that being a fairy tale artist, you've got to have that imagination. And he drops it. I dress like a vagabond. I clad my form with a dirty pinafore. Sometimes I am the warrior. Sometimes I am the creator. Sometimes I am the dispenser. I bring about the extinction. Sometimes I mix all colors and spoil the canvas. That hits on the easy notes of a fairy tale artist. But also on the back end of this, everything becomes normal. Sky gets full with birds and legs with flamingos. Pulling down the shutter of my fancy flights, dimming all bones and lights, the adept wizard vanishes quickly from sight. Again, that thought to the biting at the thought of imagination itself and embracing the fairy tale angle of things. And you have to have good imagination to actually pull that off. And he did this with his voice, even though he did have that, I am not this, but I am this, 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 and this. The warrior, creator, the dispenser. I blow the horn of destruction and count the deathless beat to my creation. Suddenly all vanish into blue. Everything comes to a halt. Everything becomes normal. Everything looks so simple and clear. Again, that goes to imagination. Nicely done there, Ted. All right. Where do we go?
All right, let's see what we got next. All right. Up next, we have Black Holes by Time Teller. And it goes like this. Around the kitchen, black holes come and go exactly like the huge ones at the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way. And I thought I was dreaming when I saw pink sands on a beach, but I wasn't. Much like the time it rained frogs, or that day the road disappeared before my eyes. What is fucking strange and makes me question in reality are the people who come into my life insisting they be there. They shit stir and poke and lie and deny and then shit stir and poke. The strange isn't that. After all, that's people. No, the strange is that they stand in pulpits and preach kindness and love. Why don't they preach control and feminizing and ego bashing and just all around hatefulness in the name of truth seeking? That's stranger than fiction or imagination, that these little minded people wear robes and volunteer their services in order to be in all the right places and shit stir. These black holes just appear and disappear like people who shit stir, sucking in the gullible until no light is visible. End poem.
And Time Teller took. I learned a long time ago that reality was much weirder than anyone's imagination. And took a bite on this, offering up black holes in a different thought, which was nice unto itself, even though offers up the thought of like a huge one at the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way, and then offering the truth there. And I thought I was dreaming when I saw pink sands on the beach, but I wasn't. Much like the time it rained frogs, or that day the road disappeared before my eyes. Truths in there. I like that. And then what is fucking strange and makes me question reality are the people that come in, they shit, stir, and poke, lie and deny, and then shit, stir, and poke. Like the ones who preach control and feminizing and ego bashing and just all around hatefulness in the name of truth seeking. Yeah, the idea of those who preach from the pulpit and those who preach from other pulpits that aren't associated with the robe wearing, but the idea of, hey, I'm to be believed, not these other people, and the gullibility of humanity inviting into the concept of, hey, in order to get rid of racism, you actually have to teach racism. That way we can defeat racism, which offers up not a linchpin of sanity within that thought itself. And then I thought, hey, these black holes just disappear and disappear like people who stir shit sucking in the gullible until no light is visible. That's the idea. You draw enough people in, and then you've got full control of the situation. And you don't have to worry about the other side because, you know what? The ones who you bought onto the crap are going to shut down those who actually open up their mouths to disprove the stupidity that is strewn across the pages, the television, the radio, or the internet. I like that. Nicely done, TT. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right, Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, I always enjoy Tim Keller's writing. I like that he takes a look at the idea of a black hole and applies it to how, you know, some people just suck people in, you know, with their lies and their shit stirring. And I really do just enjoy that phrase, they shit stir and poke, you know, just a really great way for how, you know, to say how people just come into your life and stir the pot. You know, I love how this, the main message of this is that hypocrisy, you know, the idea of those who go behind, who hide behind the pulpit, who hide behind their preaching and their showmanship. Instead of being honest acts of love, they're the acts of love done in order to say, look at how good I am. You know, look at how much you should trust me and believe in me. You know, and I like how he punches, has the punch of the F word, you know, what is fucking strange and makes me question reality are the people who come into my life. You know, and we've all dealt with these kind of people and we've all met these kind of people. And I really like that ending too. So these black holes just appear and disappear like people who shit stir sucking in the gullible until no light is visible. And what that tells me is that there's a light in this world. There is a sense of hope and love in this world, but it's disappearing beneath the darkness of hypocrisy. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
All right, where are we going now?
All right. What Luke can do is he can always write for one of your prompts, and then we can read it on next week's show. So if he ends up finding some inspiration, and he says, I like that he says in Luke says in Late Night Poets. However, these writes have been very impressive. I especially love the different perspectives of your prompts. That is true. It's been great to see. I have to agree with him. It's been great to see the different perspectives, and you know, so very cool. And up next week, we have, I Know, I See, But I Doubt by Spectrum DN. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. I think, I believe, I swear, I know, I see, but I doubt. By Spectrum DN. The lampposts on my streets that I casually walk by for years and years are not of tungsten, I know. Now I stumble like the soon-to-be-blind, using canes to read braille on cobblestones, I believe. I even started to slur my children's names, called one of them Donard. God strike me dead as I rub my eyes with manacled hands, I swear. One night on my way back from a hospice visit, I ambled on a comatose legs down Amnesia Street, I believe. Just then, these lamps began to flicker again and saw black robed people's behavioral change, I think. I stopped dead in my tracks for a better look, but my shadows run amok in self-doubt gloom, I swear. An eclipse of moths snuffing out my news as I started to watch the evening news. I see. I finally realized the lampposts on our streets that we casually walk by for years and years have gaslighted the living daylight out of us. End poem. And you took prompt 7. Paranoia is just another word for ignorance. End poem. End poem. That was the prompt. All right, Pam.
Well, first of all, great read there. I'm really glad Strum Dien was inspired to write for this contest and show. You know, I'm a big fan of his poetry. I really like the imagery in this. You know, use of the word tungsten, that's just a great word. You know, even the title is poetic and speaks volumes. I think, I believe, I swear, I know, I see, but I doubt. And I think that's part of human nature is doubt. That, you know, and let's see. One night on my way back from a hospice visit, I ambled on comatose legs down Amnesia Street, I believe. Just then, these lamps began to flicker again and saw black robe people behavior change, I think. Stopped dead in my tracks for a better look. My child ran amok in self-doubt and gloom. I like how each stanza ends with the words from his title. And I like how he takes us into this moment of darkness, this, almost like the play of shadow and light, where we question reality. It's that, you know, like how oftentimes when you're in a not fully dark room, but like maybe like poorly lighted, and the shade and shadows and light kind of play with your mind. And the moment of realization, I finally realized the lampposts on our streets that we casually walk by for years and years have gaslighted the living daylight out of us. And I really appreciate the layers in this, and especially in that ending, and the idea of the people that we have trusted, the theories we have trusted, the philosophies we have trusted all our lives, because it's been passed down from generation to generation, have been gaslighting us for their own needs. That idea of making us doubt ourselves, you know, making us feel like we shouldn't be asking questions, when in reality, You should ask questions. You have the right to ask questions and to be human and to doubt and to live your life how you want. But, you know, I really like how he brought in the concept of being gaslighted by the powers that be. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said. But there's another addition to this. There's a second ending note to this piece itself, right down the right side of the whole piece. I know I believe, I swear I believe, I think, I swear I see. There's that extra notation of just a little extra for the piece that most kind of look at as just, hey, it's something in the moment, but it actually, since it's all separated and walks down the very same path, start to finish, it is noted as an addition to the piece itself, because the underlying thought to this, as you hit on it, the lampposts on my street that I casually walk by for years and years are not of tungsten. That offers up the notation to light being spread upon your journey. But it also, as you noted, it speaks to those that we trust. And for this demonstration, I'll go with the thought of the media, because that is where the big idea comes from. Now I stumble like the soon-to-be-blind, using canes to read Braille on cobblestones. That note of finding some truths that were not truths, an outright lie, and all the things like you've been blind for the note, and you're hanging out in the darkness to the point where you're actually blind. The thought of manacled hands. Also hits on the note of being subjugated or being tied to something as opposed to staying tied to the truth. And then again, the next one down, amnesia streak, that whole hog belief in what they've been spilling. All of a sudden, you've been finding out the back end of the full-on gaslighting barrage is to teach you, keep you in control within that amnesia, because if you're not asking questions, then they're not giving the answers, and the narrative they give is the narrative they want you to know, as opposed to the narrative that which is truthful. The behavioral change hits on that notion of those who are actually waking up to the idea of, hey, the only ones you can offer up the truth in is yourself. And that comes with a clear discernment, which means you have to do the investigating yourself. If something sounds funny, doesn't come across the right way, you should be digging into the truth. Don't believe those little tidbits all across Facebook, Google, and everything else. It's, this happened. Yes. All you do is click on the notion of that headline. You don't read into the story, which is a grand failing of today's people, because if they actually bypass the thought of the headline, which is outrageous to begin with, and impart something that you they've already thrown into your head, then you don't find the actual truth, which in the piece somewhere down around word 600 or 700, they might actually impart the truth, which is, hey, the headline's full of shit, and maybe you should be reading the whole thing instead of ad hoc. Nicely done there, Spectrum. I like that.
Absolutely, me too. And really great observations there, Rex, and the idea of, you know, searching, you know, making sure you're actually researching the truth for the narrative that is actually actual rather than the narrative they want you to believe. So very cool. All right. And up next we have "And They Went Behind" by Blue Right 76, and it goes like this. "And they went behind like goats to the butcher, eyes nowhere but the apple. The donkey walked doe-eyed, slowly the cargo on his back heavier. Yet he went light and dreamy, starry-eyed and devoted, proud spine, a mutant twig bent, naught but his loved ones at the fulcrum of the soft tornado, forging into the mist, less of what he gave he sought. When to love is to woe, said the wise sages, and all the folk lure true, gaunt, gone, and leaves. Those learnt of the bloodshed as they love in vain, woman, land, money, child, and kin. The warriors of their armors shed under the assault of love. Later, as the thirst imbibed him in drops, slurps his hunger unappeased. Then he went for more. When his heart's deep pits opened, the chests he fed, all the coins and good days pure in his greed. Nothing deterred him as he went willing onto the butcher's table, fed for love, for what little smile that the procession led. His glory, life, and fall became, but something did save him, the something called content. And they yet went like goats unto the butcher's knife." And poem.
Great read, Pam. And Blue also took that it was the law of the sea, they said. Civilization ends at the waterline. Beyond that, we all enter the food chain, and not always right at the top. Took this with a different direction, with the sort of a metaphorical as opposed to Gerald's literality, which worked very well. But this also worked on that same eyes nowhere but the apple, the donkey walked doe-eyed, slowly the cargo on his back heavier. Yet he went light and dreamy, starry-eyed and devoted. Boy, there's kind of a note to THX1138 in that, the sort of, hey, everyone is docile to the point. Why? Because we feed them pills all day long, every day. Pills to make you sleep at night, but pills to keep you happy and docile during the day, which also kind of rolls back into the last poem by Spectrum with the thought of being gaslit to the point where you actually walk doe-eyed like the donkey, or the sheep, heading easily onto the butcher's knife, which is where we all go if we don't pay attention to things, because they will take everything on their way to proving that they know what is best for us, as opposed to what we know what is best for us. The thought of us offering up those things which appeal to different people, the warriors, their armor shed under the assault of love, later as the thirst abides in drops, slurps his hunger on a piece, then the greed, and then nothing deterred him as he went willing under the butcher's knife, fed for love, fed for that little smile that the procession led, his glory, life, and fall became something it saved him. That's something called content. The idea of instead of being just another of the plethora, like the song we open with, Knife Edge, every week, being those fed into the machine or the furnace or the specter, the ghost on the street, the one who follows unto the rules. Yet the rules are the hanging tree, that voice to the thought of, there's a movie called Something Green. The in the future are the ones being fed into the machine.
Oh, Solvent Green.
Yes, where you actually get your feed biscuits every day, yet they're made out of those who went willing into the machine to begin with. So the idea being, hey, those who are easily appeased and those who have no minds are the ones that give freely and always end up on the butcher block first. Then they throw in the dissenters.
Yep. Yeah, that is a really great observation. Yeah, you know, I really like that the idea that he took this metaphorically, and the metaphor of the goats that just blindly go to the butcher, you know, without any question. I like that he brought in the donkey. Eyes nowhere but the apple. The donkey walked doe-eyed, slowly, the cargo on his back heavier, yet he went light and dreamy, starry-eyed and devoted.
That apple is the carrot on a stick.
I knew that, actually. But thank you, in case I didn't. because it is. It's that idea of, it's being so focused on the goodie that's in front of you, the bribe. It's almost like that bribe that's right in front of you that, you know, and you're so focused on that. And that's your whole world, that you have blinders on to what's going on around you. I really also like the use of the word fulcrum, and what were some other parts. There was a kind of a spiritual tone to this, like in a way that, you know, the idea of how of blindly following. And I also really liked the warriors, their armor shed under the assault of love, later as the thirst imbibed him and drops, slurps his hunger appeased. To me that really speaks well on the idea of people who were once willing to fight for their freedoms, once willing to fight for their rights, have basically passively laid down and shown their underbelly, all because they've been convinced that what is not actually love is love. And whenever I see goats mentioned, you know, I always think of the idea of the goat that gets sent out into the desert. What's that called again? The goat that takes all the blame of the sins.
Scapegoat. Yeah, but there's,
yes.
They call it something else that goes along. A sin eater.
Okay, I've never heard that phrase before. I just had heard that the term scapegoat came from the idea that the Hebrew people – would put all their like sins onto the goat and then send it out into the desert. And that's how the term scapegoat came about. And so, you know, there's always like the idea of, you know, the butcher is actually the problem. The butcher is the evil one and the liar, but he's saying, look who's actually to blame. It's the goats. And, you know, so really just a great approach to the prompt and very well done.
Well, a sin eater is a person who consumes a ritual meal in order to spiritually take on the sins of a deceased person, the believed to absorb the sins and reach the dead person, thus absolving the soul of the person. Sin eaters, as a consequence, carry the sins of all people whose sins they had eaten. They were usually feared and shunned.
Oh, wow. What particular culture is that from?
Welsh.
Okay. Well, that's really cool. I never heard of that. Learned something new. So, awesome.
All right.
And next. So now we're going. Oh, yep. And sorry about that. Up next, that was, by the way, the Davar rites for the Going Gonzo. And now we've got a couple of After Midnight carryovers. And then after that, if there's time, we'll have some break on through carryovers. So.
Oh, I got one more.
Oh, you got one more?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Hang on a second.
Go ahead and. All right. I'll take Grant G off for now. And we'll put him back. All right.
Julie put this one in about an hour ago.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, well, what of Julie's? Did we? So she changed it out?
I don't know. Maybe she did.
She must have.
Yeah.
But you know what? She's just going to have to wait because I'm not going to read two of hers because we read hers from this contest, right? I mean, okay, I guess it's up to you. It's your show, your choice.
Right.
We'll go ahead and read it.
Should we?
Huh?
I'm just looking. Oh, yeah. Can I nap in heaven? That's right. Huh. And she wrote a second one. Interesting. Unusual, but interesting.
All right. Well, that's fine. Go ahead and give it a read.
Okay. The silent treatment bites both ways. And she took yesterday's weirdness is tomorrow's reason why. I'm an asshole. I'm even a dweller, some say. Never thought things would be this way. He judges. I think we all do. He also condemns and bans out of his life. I'm blue. I haven't needed you for a long, long time, he said. Well, what about me? And I bled. But that was yesterday. Here it is tomorrow. He wants to talk with me again. He's changed it all to below zero. I'm your mom, goddammit. How could this be? I'm here, should you ever just want or need me. My reason is simple. I'm a person, not a toy. And you, why, you're just a little 36-year-old baby boy. And ho.
Great read there, Rex.
A little bit different with a bite to it. Okay. All right. What you got?
All right. Well, that kind of took me by surprise. But, you know, I guess sometimes we figure that, you know, inspiration comes in different ways. I like that she chose the prompt, yesterday's weirdness is tomorrow's reason why. wonderful, straightforward language. Like you said, it's got a real bite to it. I like where she says, he judges. I think we all do. He also condemns and bans out of his life. I'm blue. I haven't needed you for a long, long time, he said. Well, what about me? And I bled. I like how she brings in the bleeding as like an emotional bleeding, the realization that you're no longer important. You know, and I like the nod towards the idea that we all judge in one way or another. And so to judge someone silently isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's when the words come out. And it just really hits hard when she says, I'm your mom, God damn it. How could this be? I'm here should you ever just want or need me. You know, it's so, this has an emotional impact to it because of the fact that, you know, here's somebody you love unconditionally. And someone you want to love and embrace your whole life, but too oftentimes as they grow, you see the ugly side of them come out. You know, I like how when she opens it, she says, I'm an asshole. I'm even a dweller, some say. I feel like there's that whole kind of pride. There's almost a sense, as much as this has a bite to it, there's almost also a sense of pride in, you know what, I'm an asshole, my son's an asshole, you know, and it's like a chip off the old block. So, you know, just really clever write and very well done.
Well said. I'm going to hit with both things because the opening fits that, but the back end is also a nice little, my reason is simple, I'm a person, not a toy. And you, why, you're just a little 36-year-old baby boy. Kind of hints the notion of maybe the thought of growing up through some a little disappointment here and there, but also in the long run, the back end has proved disappointing at the age of mid-30s. So, and the thought of condemns and bans, that's kind of hard-edged. And again, he wants to talk to me again. He's changed it all to below zero. There's a touch of coldness in the moment. Offering up, hey, you got the phone call. Be thankful I'm an iceberg and not a full-blown trip to Antarctica.
Oh, absolutely. Well said there, Rex.
All right. So where do we go now?
All right. Up next we have A Daily Battle by Grant G. And it goes like this. The chains of addiction only begin to let go with surrender. Then and only then will certain actions help freedom to grow. But as many know, putting vice down will only be the start of the show. The empty feeling, which was void we had tried to fulfill, can now positively grow. But he warned, without daily maintenance on the go, those fluffy clouds we might have got to know can darken, leaving us feeling heavily laden. Under thunder erupts and we explode. For years, many will have prayed and even begged to be free. Our soul, let not allow that gift to blow. Freedom, we've got to know, but life can be a daily battle, and lack of action can keep it so. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Grant took a free spirit takes liberties, even with freedom itself. But on the front end, well, the daily battle, whether it's addiction or not, if you've got a void within yourself that you need filling, it's because you hold something truer to yourself. And that is escapism, just to get away from that feeling, to feel something why you end up with the a daily maintenance on the go and feeling heavily laden. So the funding erupts and explodes once you haven't got that. So the note of daily maintenance works both ways, whether you're in the full addiction of thought or on the back end where you're trying to get past it, at which most do not actually kick. The recidivism rate in addiction, whether it be alcohol or drugs, is quite staggering. So the idea of faith kind of walks into this. The note of you got to have faith in yourself and the strength. Otherwise, it's not a road you end up walking. It's a road you end up crawling back to. What about you?
Absolutely. I like what you had to say about, you know, having to have faith along the way to the battle of addiction. I like that he took this quote in a different way, that he took a look at the idea of finding freedom from addiction and how difficult of a battle that it can be. I did particularly like that fourth stanza with, but be warned, without daily maintenance on the go, those fluffy clouds we might have got to know. And you mentioned the heavily laden, how it like weighs down on us, how the it feels like the dark clouds hanging over you and how they're not easy to get rid of. And for years, many will have prayed and even begged to be a freer soul. Let's not allow that gift to blow. You know, I really like that he brings in the idea of that it is a gift given. When you're given the opportunity to be free from something that chains you down, that harms you, it's a gift, but it's also a daily battle, a struggle. And any kind of freedom does not come easily. You know, there's always someone always pays some sort of a price. So wonderful write and very well done.
Okie dokie, so where do we go next?
All right, okie dokie, Smokey. Here we go next. The Ape Within by Chaucer's Horses. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read.
The Ape Within by Chaucer's Horses. And she took, let us never forget that the greatest man is never more than an animal disguised as a god. These words, I think, are some meant to convey there is no need to stand in awe at all of anyone, no matter who they are. For all of us were born with feet of clay, a thing that we would do well to recall. Though some may seem to reach a higher star, in each of us there dwells an uncouth ape who has the means to bring about our fall. These animals we try to keep at bay. The dread of them is what helped me to shape these words. And Paul.
Great, Rex. I keep accidentally giving you the shorter rites. Geez, I should have took that one for myself.
Hey,
all right, well.
After having two rights last night that totaled 1,400 words, I deserve a break.
Oh, man, too funny, yep. All right, yeah, you occasionally deserve a shorty. Well, first of all, I've not seen Chaucer's Horses before on our shows, so it's really great to see a new name. I look forward to hearing more from her. I'm glad she was inspired. I thought this was a wonderful brevity. I like the line, you know, I like this all the way through, but especially for all of us, we're born with feet of clay. The idea that, you know, we were created from the earth, we're formed. But also, I don't know, it kind of makes me think of that monster, the golem, you know, being controlled. But it also makes me think of how we are connected to the earth. And I like where she says, though some may seem to reach a higher star, in each of us there dwells an uncouth ape. You know, it doesn't matter in your personal life how far you make it. You know, if you're a genius or you become famous or whatever grand thing has happened to you in your life, we are all connected to the earth. We are all human beings. I think this was a great take on the provided prompt. And I really also like where she says, these animals we try to keep at bay, the dread of them is what helped me to shape these words. And that's a really good point. I think that's actually a very powerful point in this poem, is that our ability to use language to convey emotions, and especially written language, is one of the things that does separate us from the other animals. So really great, thoughtful write here, and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. Funny that you mentioned golem, considering in Jewish folklore, the golem is that thing, that inanimate object endowed with life, usually made of clay. So nice touch with
that.
Yeah,
that's why I mentioned that. Yep.
Well, I like the bite in this one line, pretty much near the end. In each of us there dwells an uncouth ape. It's true. There is that note to music has charms that soothe the savage breast. Not beast, it actually is breast. The thought to music once heard and listened to calms that savage breast, brings about an ease to the heart and relates it to a calmer place, so to speak. So the uncouth ape walks back to our lizard brain idea, the fact of fight or flight, the need to protect, because back in the day, everything wanted to eat us, so to speak. We weren't at the top of the food chain. Well, literally, we weren't. We were not the masters of the domain. We were just another pitiful thing way back in the day, hiding in caves, finally getting the thought to fire, because before that, hey, those caves were dark, dank, cold, without light, and everything that came in it was dangerous. The thought of those animals we try to keep at bay, the dread of them is what helped me to shape truth to that. And it also points, it gives full definition to ourselves, but also to the thought of not standing in awe to anyone, giving a bowed nod or allegiance to, because no one is any different from the next one. All right, what we got next?
All right, great comment there, Rex. And now we're going to move on to the break on through carryovers. Up next we have Cynophobia Clinomania by Luke J.R. And it goes like this. Unfurnished spaces and rows of shadowed faces, columns, P, C, A, C, B, C, C, through the desolate darkness faces, it's turning a blind eye to those that stay inside four walls. The walls often speak to me through words that displease myself. I'm staggered taller than everyone else. On this bed is good health. Hollow goodbyes were met with silent hellos. Hands speak louder than words. I'm always being watched by cowardly faces of all races. These walls are comforting to those who stay inside. All I see are the shadows that I shall never walk beside. By surprise, I'm visited by watchful eyes, redness through tears. Black ink might make one think that a caged visitor is red ink, like a squid with a watchful eye. I squint through the darkness, comforted by this shallow, dry mattress. Others are soaked in ink. It may make one think, how much did you really have to drink? Any signs that there were once in reading view, I already knew. I'm free to walk through the shadows, for freedom awaits me. That sweet release that pales in comparison to those who betrayed me. Within the watchful eyes of those who dream of better skies, I'm a chamber of secrecy that follows the order of being discreet. Pitter-patter, there's violence from the stomping feet. Many are disorganized, others lost within the thoughts that lied. If I were to speak to any watchful eyes, I'd have to think of a reason for this ink. It's not upon myself to give myself that good health that I'm fortunate to have. We're all bathed in the tears of those that cried, I never tried. If four walls are waiting those that are brave enough to walk away, all I see are no walls, shadows with barely visible doors. Yet I believe that if I was to walk into the darkness, I'd find a light switch. Within that second, within that moment, they surely did switch ink upon the desolate, oddly shaped spaces under the watchful, hidden faces. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Nicely done. The thought with clinophobia is a morbid propensity to lay in bed. And I don't know about the other one. Haven't got that far. Well, clinomania, the obsessive desire to lay in bed. And xenophobia, I'll have to look that one up. As well as the is a fear in this. Fear of maybe people itself. Fear of, because it admits to, I don't want to know, taller than everyone else on this bed is good health. And the idea of staying inside four walls that you can totally control is an easy thought of distancing yourself from everyone else. And the thought, black ink might make one think that a cage visitor is red ink. Red ink, someone that could be rubbed out, erased, or edited. I like that thought with that. Like a scribble to watch for eye, I squint through the darkness. Comforted by the shallow, dry mattress, others are soaked in ink. It may be one of, it may be, yeah, may make one think, how much do you really have to drink? Not sure about the drink angle, but the thought of someone drowning in their own ink without the verbal viscosity to actually equate that thought to paper, had me thinking. You hit some many disorganized, others lost within thoughts that lied. If I was to speak to any watchful eyes, I have to think of reason for the sake. And again, pointing back to the thoughts that he got hanging out within this four-wall space, but also, yet I believe that if I was to talk into darkness, I'd find a light switch. And the notion of understanding where he is and what the problem is, but still afraid to actually offer up that spoken word, because there'd be a light switch that could offer up some visibility in the moment, which might hit on the notion of the abstract imagery that comes across as the fear within his voice. All right, what you got?
Well, great observations there, Rex. I really like that you brought up the light switch, which to me, the light switch in there's such a sense of hope in that. By the way, xenophobia is the fear of new things, meeting new people, going, you know, or of even new ideas, new things and new ideas, the fear of that. So, you know, it really, you know, speaks on the whole idea of people who want to stay encased in their safe zone. And like, it almost, you know, speaks to me of the whole idea that even though it's not in the title, that fear that people have of leaving their houses. You know, I really like how he keeps bringing ink into this, how as poets, as writers, we express ourselves with our ink and the freedoms we have to voice our thoughts. And, you know, I like the sound of pitter-patter. There's violence from the stomping feet. Many are disorganized, others lost within the thoughts that lied. It really goes to me in the idea of how we're led astray by lies, being taught that we need to stay in the box in order to stay safe. And you had brought up the light switch in the dark room, and to me that really, you know, represented, as I said, hope. Yet I believe that if I was to walk into the darkness, well, it does say talk, but I'm not sure if he meant talk or walk. But either way, the idea that if you know there is going to be a light switch, even though nobody has ever shown you the light switch, you know, it just has a great sense of faith and of hope. I also really like hollow goodbyes are met with silent hellos, hands speak louder than words. A great way to phrase the idea of that actions speak louder than words, that we're judged by our actions rather than, you know, our words. And this really does strike a chord with the whole idea of that which we fear to step out of. So wonderful, right, and very well done. Well, there's not much time left, so do you want to just wrap things up?
Sure. Well, great show. And Luke and Robbie, thank you very much for the voice. And I guess we got another Luke on the board as well. So thank you for being there. And we'll do this again next Tuesday. Remember, tomorrow, this time tomorrow, 12:30, is the new show. The Headliner's Ball, it's called, with Jeremy leading out the list. So come and join the debut show with Jeremy, Headliner's Ball. And check on Sunday's offering for Rhythm and Rhyme. It's featuring two cellos, a lot of great music. The boys are absolutely fantastic musicians using cellos to dig into rock and roll, which is something very different.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that show, Rex. That should be awesome.
Absolutely.
Yes, so we definitely have a great lineup of shows for this week that I highly recommend people check out. So, awesome show. And good night, Rex.
All right. Good night. See you all next week.